This is the Kinky Cast. This is an adult, sexually explicit podcast. If you are under 18 years old, please stop the podcast now. This is episode 19 of our weekly exploration in the kinky world of BDSM and alternative relationships. In today's episode, we have Luna on positive pain processing. Here's our hosts, Woody and the Beast.
Thanks, Max, and here's another edition of the Kinky Cast. Across the table, as usual, is the Beast. How are you tonight?
I am well, Woody. I am well. Also with us tonight is the brilliantly intelligent. And I'm doing this because I was educated just a while back to not just talk about a woman's beauty, even though she is a stunning beauty.
But they're not objects, you know.
They're not objects. So she's brilliant and talented. We have Gabrielle with us tonight.
Take it away.
Thank you, Beast. And I am perfectly okay with being called beautiful, gorgeous, ravishing, as well as intelligent. So usually a combo works best. Tonight, we have Luna KM, the author, editor, and owner of SubmissiveGuide.com, a community and blog for novice and experienced submissives, as well as IronGate.com, a BDSM resource and knowledge database. Luna is a full-time slave in a master-slave relationship and a self-proclaimed web slut. She started blogging while exploring DS online in 2003. Submissive Guide was one of the very first sites that I found in my exploration into my submissive nature and my own personal kinks. I read every single article I could get my hands on, and pretty much within an hour of finding it, I signed up for the daily newsletter. Luna, thank you very much for joining us, and it is such a pleasure to have the opportunity to speak with you.
Oh, thank you. I'm very happy to be here.
Tell us, what exactly is SubmissiveGuide.com, and how did it come into being?
SubmissiveGuide.com is a website that I created for submissives, mainly novice submissives, but I do focus on some of the seasoned submissive tasks and struggles that they face as well. It started in January of 2009 after an experiment with a previous more static resource site that I had. I had found that online the resources that I had used for learning about BDSM were starting to disappear. They were just getting old, they were falling apart, and they were just vanishing. And I knew that the internet was going to be a big, important place for BDSM information. And so I knew that I could write from experience, and I enjoyed blogging. So I decided to create a site that would be available for novice submissives to explore themselves, their personal path and submission, and learn a bit more about BDSM.
When you originally started blogging, was it about BDSM, or were you in another genre?
It was about BDSM. I have had a personal blog for a little over 10 years, so it actually started more as just telling my personal journey in starting with online submission, and then I had a long-distance relationship, and then he moved in, and it became a part-time play relationship, and then it moved further into full-time DS, and then eventually to a master-slave dynamic.
And did you find that Submissive Guide really took off quickly, or did it take a while? How did that blossom?
As far as readership, it took quite a while. I started out with about 2,000 page views a month. It now gets over 150,000 page views a month.
Wow.
So it's doing considerably better. But I contribute that to the fact that I write all of the time, and people can really connect with what I write about.
I would definitely say that's the truth. Every article that I read, every newsletter that I get, it's like you're striking chord after chord after chord. Now, you recently wrote a series of blogs, had YouTube videos, and have written an ebook about pain processing techniques during play. Can you tell us, what is it exactly that you mean by pain processing?
pain processing is an active way that you can take the sensations that you experience during sadomasochistic play and make them more positive, more rewarding, and more mutually fulfilling experience, because we all know everyone processes pain very differently. Mm-hmm. So how you handle it is a result of how you were raised and your social upbringing. So learning positive pain processing can help you get further in play than you ever thought possible.
Are there common ways that people process pain?
There are common ways. There are natural methods, and then there are learned methods. The first one that we have is when we're born, the only way we know how to handle pain is to accept it. It's something that is very common that you see a child, when they get hurt, they're going to cry because they just know that pain is there and they have to experience it. But as we grow up, we learn through social wiring and through the way we're raised that there are other ways to handle pain, and they're not always the best ways. The very most common way that adults handle pain is through rejection or denial. Mm-hmm. And that's mostly because we've been told that it's inappropriate to experience or show pain. So, I mean, if you take, for example, baseball coaches tell you to walk it off, or parents that tell the child that only sissies cry. So we learn that we need to reject the pain. And oftentimes it becomes a subconscious choice when we're trying to fit into that social atmosphere that we grew up in.
When I was growing up, I heard a lot to suck it up. So
that's a very common one too, yep.
Now, you had listed a third natural method. I believe mm-hmm. you referred to it as devouring.
Yes. Devouring is the complete opposite of rejection. It is a relatively rare form of pain processing, and it is not really something you can learn easily, and I am not a devourer. A devourer is a person who doesn't feel pain in the same way that most others do. They'll respond to pain like you're high on drugs. It's full of energy boost, and they'll want increasingly more and more intense forms of pain to get that boost. Mm-hmm. It's amazingly interesting to watch someone devour pain, and instead of the more common catharsis that bottoms get after play, a devouring bottom will be all bubbly and full of energy and raring for more.
Now, by catharsis, do you mean more of kind of the calm subspace floaty feeling, or are you referring to, you know, emotional outburst?
Catharsis would be closer along the subspace line. You don't always have to reach subspace for pain play to reach its maximum fulfillment for both people. And so catharsis is where you're in that peaceful, happy place.
As a new submissive myself, and a new bottom, I am learning how to process pain. I really found it interesting that you outlined the negative methods, and I did find myself kind of going down a checklist with those. Can you explain those for us?
Sure. There are three common negative methods to pain processing that we adopt. These are all ones that we learn through our social networking and through growing up. The first one is detachment, and it is the most common negative pain processing method that bottoms use during play. It's where you mentally separate your mind from your body. And in this state, you can't experience the pain fully. You can lose ability to process any sort of sensations at all. And oftentimes, the person that is trying to experience the pain loses the ability to connect with reality. Mm-hmm. It is different than subspace, and we can cover that in a moment if you'd like, because I know a lot of people describe being out-of-body experiences and detachment for subspace as well. Mm-hmm. But the second negative method is compression, and it's most common with emotional pain. If you think about the levels of grief and you've got the denial stage, that is what compression is where you internalize the pain so you can deal with it later. And most commonly in play, you will see the bottom clenching their butt muscles or tensing up their shoulders. They'll hold their breath, and you can visibly watch them shrink into themselves and kind of like you're sucking the pain in and trying to wrap it up in this tiny little package. The negative side of that is if you don't release that pain that you've pressed into a little box, you can get stress, headaches, muscle fatigue, and exhaustion. So if you don't learn to let go of that, it can be really detrimental, not only to the play, but your aftercare as well.
Yeah, that's definitely not where you want to go with play, is a headache.
No, it's not at all. The third negative method is the fight and extinguish method. And it's the most exhausting one that I've been able to see someone do. Pretty much, if, for example, you see someone getting flogged on a cross, and if they're fighting and extinguishing, they're constantly moving and twitching and vibrating, and they look like they're really angry at the pain. They're just, you can see them constantly going, I will not accept this. It doesn't hurt that bad. I can grit my teeth through it. And they're trying to prevent the pain from hurting the worst.
They're trying to fight it.
Feel it all. Yep. And they'll be very tense, very focused, and they can actually get very aggressive while they're pain processing.
I know you had asked your readers in the blog if they recognized any of the descriptions, if they saw themselves in any of the descriptions of negative methods. I personally, like I said, it was like checking off a checklist. While I was reading the different techniques, I realized that I used several of them, not only the natural, but the negative and the positive, which we'll talk about in a moment. But I found myself, you know, I'll find myself clenching my teeth, clenching my fists, you know, my muscles, altering my breathing patterns. Sometimes I'll, you know, breathe very deeply or even hold my breath at times. And I'm usually trying to psych myself out. I'll wiggle and jump around. So I thought it was quite interesting when I was reading through those to see myself.
A lot of people do see themselves in those, yep.
I'm curious, did you consider yourself a masochist when you started this project, or did you grow into being a masochist, or do you even consider yourself a masochist now?
I identified as being a masochist long before I identified being a submissive. I was always into a bit of pain with my sex, and so just finding how far that actually went has been a wonderful journey for me, so I definitely identify as a masochist.
So coming into the DS world, that opened up a new acceptance of the use of pain as a positive exploration. I imagine that it's totally different getting rough sex from a kinky boyfriend than rough sex from a vanilla boyfriend. So this opened up a whole new realm of exploration for you, I imagine, and when you discovered the DS world.
Yes. Very much so.
Did I see a smile? Yep, I did.
You had mentioned that in your writing that it is very important for us to understand our partner's ways of processing pain. Why is this so important?
Well, it's important on several levels. It's important for the masochist to understand that the way they process pain works for them. Because even though I'm going to tell you how different ways to process pain, there's a huge variety. And as long as you find a method that works for you, then your appreciation of the play that you engage in will be so much more fulfilling. And then for the sadist that is playing with you, you'll be able to give them more responses. And I don't know about you, but sadists feed off of those responses. So they want to see you respond to what they're doing. Also, it goes along with if a sadist knows pain processing methods and they're playing with a bottom who looks like they're having problems, because they're very observant, they look like they're having problems, they can coach them through a more positive pain processing method that might help them get a little further. So it's always very important to know how that works.
Luna, I am learning a lot. I identify as a sadist among my many hats I wear. And I'm picking up a lot from your talk here that I'm going to be taking into my play, because I have seen bottoms process the pain and all the different styles you have discussed. And being aware of this allows me a greater comfort level and a greater freedom to interact with this bottom if I realize what methods that they're using and how those methods are going to manifest themselves in the play scene. So I think it's very important for the sadist to understand this. It's easy to narrow our vision and think, oh, she's not giggling, so she's not enjoying it. That may not be her processing method. So
right.
I'm fascinated.
It would be good to add to your negotiation as well if the person is aware of pain processing techniques. Just ask them, how do they respond to pain, and see if you're at least aware that maybe this person cries when they reach a certain level, and it's okay to cry, so can understand how they do that. Or I'm a giggler myself. When things are going really well, I will laugh to death and I will taunt you with more. So if that is jarring for some sadists, if they're not aware that this is coming into play. So it's a good idea in negotiation even to say, well, how do you handle pain? How do you respond? Are you quiet? Are you loud? Do you like to move a lot? Do you like to restrain yourself?
That reminds me of a previous episode, a guest.
Right, we had a stoic on.
Very stoic bottom that barely moved, barely made a sound. That is definitely something that I, going forward, will add to my negotiations. It's common for people to use multiple techniques during play. Is that correct?
Yes, it's very common. It's actually very uncommon to only pick one and have it work for every single pain sensation. So it's very common to chain them together.
Can you elaborate on that? Give us some examples.
Sure. I can tell you my method of pain management that works best for me is, I call it rainbows and fireworks, because when you write this stuff, you have to practice.
Well, right.
One of the positive pain processing methods is dispersion, and one of the more common ways to disperse the pain is through light visualization. So you'd like imagine a cane strike, for example. When it hits your bottom, it's a certain color, and as the pain radiates, it changes color. And for me, for the longest time, it just used to be shades of white. So it would go from white to yellow and fade away, and I finally just got faded and decided it was going to be rainbows. And so everything starts out bright red and fades indigo. So that works really well for intense impact play. But I noticed that for things that are a constant pain, really tight bondage, nipple clamps, that sort of thing that just is just constantly painful, mm-hmm. I learned that I needed something different. And so other than the imagining rainbows, I do the fireworks, which is a storage technique. And with storage, what you're doing is it's kind of like you're wrapping a package and you're storing that pain up and you're holding it up. And then as soon as you get a signal from your sadist or your top, it could be anything from just a okay or just tap or something, you let it go all in one big outburst.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people can scream, a lot of people moan. And I do what I call fireworks, which is where my hands and feet just swirl in circles, so it's like the fireworks that are on the sticks that spin around.
You know, I have a feeling that I would love to watch you play.
I bet you would. It's very entertaining, I'm sure.
Luna, I am not usually this active during one of Gabrielle's interviews, but I'm curious, your background. You sound like you have some metaphysical background here with the visualizations and all of that. Is that, did you have some metaphysical background with energy play and so forth before you come into the pain play?
No, I didn't. I am a very studious person by nature, and I have done a lot of reading. And once I find one thread, I just keep picking, and it can take me completely out of the kinky realm, but I can still pick up those bits of information and incorporate them into what I've learned. So, no, I don't have any of that at all.
You tend to find some of the more spiritual aspects rather than just flat out metaphysical that kind of tie in.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I've often heard and have slightly experienced myself, and I'm sure I will experience it more over the coming decades, a lot of spirituality associated with it, because I know that, you know, a lot of that is your mind taking you different places, which BDSM definitely can do. So let's take it back and let's talk about the positive pain processing methods. How can we learn to process pain differently so that for those of us who are not pure masochists, how can we learn to process it so that it is pleasurable
That's definitely a very good thing to know. The very first thing you need to do, and it's a very difficult one for most people, is to relearn acceptance. That very first thing we knew when we were born, and that is that we just need to accept the pain as it is. We need to stop fighting it, and we need to basically embrace it. And a really good way to do that is through learning a meditation technique or just simple focused breathing. Mm-hmm. So one of the very first things I did when I was practicing pain management and pain processing during play is that I would just count my breathing. So whatever was going on, I was focused on the breathing. And mm-hmm. so my body learned to stop fighting the pain.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the very first step to learning any kind of pain processing technique, because you're going to need acceptance to get further in play. And if subspace is your goal, acceptance is where that will happen.
You said that the focusing on your breathing, counting your breathing, was what worked mm-hmm. for you. Are there other ways of relearning acceptance that you know of? For instance, for me, it tends to be like a drumming, kind of a very rhythmic beat tends to help me accept it a little better. Would that be another technique? Do you know of others?
Yes, that does very much the same thing, because when you're focused on your breathing, it's a very steady, constant rhythm. And so anything, even if it's the actual play that's happening, is rhythmic and at a beat you can focus on, you'll be able to let go of what you've learned and re-accept that acceptance process. So other ways for that to happen during play would be if your sadist lets you count. Mm-hmm. And I'm not talking Chicago count. I'm talking regular counting. And
You mean no dumb math?
No, none of that.
You know, a hit with two hands counts as two, okay?
Not the way it works here.
No.
And a hit on one ass cheek and hit on another is two, if not one and one.
Thank you.
This is new math to me.
And if you miss a number, we start over.
Exactly. Anything that you can do to rhythmically focus will work for relearning that acceptance technique.
Okay. Now, what is the rest of this magic formula?
The rest of the magic formula is that the visualization, like I explained that I have rainbows. The easiest one for people to learn is heat, because if you've ever been on the receiving end of a spanking, you know your butt gets hot.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really easy for you to visualize the heat that is occurring there spreading out across your body.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're in a sense doing is visualizing the pain going from that impact and spreading out. And as it spreads out, it dissipates. And because you're also focusing on it, you're accepting what's going on. So your acceptance phase is activating as well.
Okay.
And we all know that when you're warm, you're soothed and relaxed. And so that helps you get a little further as well.
Right.
Another form of visualization is light. That's what, like with my rainbows. It's easy to start with red. Mainly because if you squeeze your eyes really tight shut, you actually see, you know, red. And so to start with a red light pulsing, just like you would with the heat.
Mm-hmm.
Another option would be color. And that's different than light, because it's like you're taking a specific color. And if you've ever dropped water into a pond, you got the drop and it ripples out. So you're imagining the color strike. And you can imagine it even if you want to imagine paint. You're being splashed with pain. So it's all about visualizing what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
That can help lessen the intensity of the pain as it subsides and it disappears. That's another method.
I was just thinking when you were explaining that if you start by visualizing a red light, you might not want to say what color that you're visualizing, particularly if that is your safe word.
You might not.
And then another step, correct?
There is. Ultimately, what you're trying to do
is accept the pain, and then you're going to disperse it with either the visualization techniques or with the stories that I explained about for, like, nipple clamps and whatnot. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, you want to let it go. You want to release it. With releasing the pain, oftentimes that's done with verbal or body mechanics or with crying. You most often hear all this sort of stuff going on in a dungeon. What happens is that a bottom who does not know pain processing effectively will release too early. So they may have even gone through the acceptance and trying to disperse it through light or color or through storage, but they're triggering the release far too early, and so they're not getting the maximum fulfillment that they can get. And what fulfillment can happen in many different ways. We can get through the catharsis, we can get through pleasure, we can get subspace, but you have to try it, you have to release it at the right time. Someone who is releasing far too often, you most likely will see them just shaking, screaming, literally laughing, crying constantly. Mm-hmm. And that they're firing too frequently. They're not really processing it any other way. They're just letting it fly. The next time that you try to learn that pain processing, that person has unsuccessfully let go of pain, and so they're not familiar with how pain works for them, essentially. They're usually really new, that all you know is to scream and moan and cry because that's what you've watched on porn. So,
and, you know, porn is real life, so we should imitate it.
Oh, of course it is.
You said that some of the newer people and even probably some of the more experienced people tend to release too soon. How do you know when is a good point to release?
You know it's a good time to release when you feel there's absolutely nothing else you can do with the pain. Oftentimes, in a spanking, you or anything else, I'm just using spanking because that's a very common activity, mm-hmm. You will get to a point where you just, like, you can feel that it's like you're filled up. You're like, okay, I maxed out here, and I can't think of any more colors. I can't store it anymore. I'm tapped out. Mm-hmm. I need to let it go. Mm-hmm. And with the right person, the sadist is going to notice that and get you to move, or, you know, get you to make a noise, or let you know that it's okay to release, and then you can let your fireworks off. Mm-hmm. So it's a process, and you do learn when you've reached that point. You can sense it in yourself. You're like, I can't do anything else but let it go.
Okay, so
that's where I'm ready.
You've seen Roy G. Biv in all of his various stages and colors, and
that is so geeky.
Geek I am. Mm-hmm. There are no more colors of the rainbow that you can visualize, and yep. So that's a good indication that, yeah, let's let it go.
Or the drop of green has hit the edge of the pool, and you just it can't go any further. It has to hit the shore. So
okay, this seems like a lot. It seems like a lot to think about during a scene, a lot to try to enact during a scene. Is it really this involved? Is it really this complicated? Or is there a simple way to do all this?
Well, no one said being a bottom was easy. Well, you don't just
Beast has perked up on this one.
You've got to do a lot of thinking yourself as a bottom.
I'm just hearing lots of excuses to practice.
They're very good excuses to practice, you know?
You should have seen him perk up.
I'm trying to learn this method. Everyone's going to go home after they hear this and say, I want to practice rainbows. They've got to have rainbows and fireworks.
It has started a new thing within the Kinky Cast audience.
Yeah.
I guess so.
The only thing left to add are the spirit fingers.
Actually, I am thinking duct tape and sparklers to the fingers.
You're such a sadist.
And we'll just light them at the right moment.
You really are a sadist. All right, now.
Where did you lose control, by the way?
Him. Okay. You touched on this earlier, the difference between mm-hmm. constant pain and instant pain. Nipple mm-hmm. clamps versus the hit of a flogger. Is there a difference in how those get processed?
There can be. It's a personal preference. Once you've learned the different positive techniques that work for you, they may not work for constant pain versus the instant pain. And like I described for myself, I can't do the storage technique with instant pain, like with caning or anything, because I'm already processing it once it's happened and it's running through and I've got to let it go.
Mm-hmm.
But with something like a breast vise or 150 nipple clamps all over the body, you're constantly storing that energy and it's got to go somewhere. But you can't let it go until that nipple clamp comes off. So you've got...
Where you can let it go as soon as that flogger.
It's got to go.
But you can let it go as soon as that flogger comes off.
Yeah. So the way you manage those is very different, but you could, you know, once you know all the different techniques, you can subconsciously pick and choose while the play is going on, and it'll be less of a focused, conscious effort.
Mm-hmm.
And play does get easier when you have all of this in your arsenal.
Now, I would imagine after listening to you explain all of this that I know I plan on trying to implement the new, more positive method. And I'm sure some of our listeners, they will also try to implement this. I would imagine that this would be something that would be quite valuable as well to bring up in a negotiation, to let them know, yeah, hey, here's what I'm trying to do.
Luna, you have actually written a book. It's an ebook.
I have an ebook.
And that's available through
submissiveguide.com. I actually have a special promo for your listeners that if they want to purchase the ebook through my website and they use the promo code KinkyCast, they can get it for 50% off.
Oh, wow. So
fantastic.
Anyone who wants to do that, they just go to submissiveguide.com/ebooks. And they would get 50% off the Processing Pain in Play ebook.
That is fantastic. Thank you so much.
We'll also have that on our Hot Links page in case somebody didn't write that down.
I did want to touch a little bit on subspace because that does tend to be the goal of most people's pain play.
Please.
And I don't want to get into it really deeply because I know subspace is a topic all on its own. Subspace is something that you can consciously decide to enter or not. Most masochists have three or more goals when they enter play, and they pick one. It's very good in negotiation to decide what you want, whether you want to reach, whether your goal is catharsis, which would be, you know, that you want relaxation, you want rhythmic drumming, you want an escape from the stresses of the world,
mm-hmm.
or do you want pleasure? Do you want to get your pain all heightened up until you are totally sexually frustrated and then off you go? Another one would be subspace. And subspace for masochists, and I don't know if it's for all masochists, I can't talk for all of them, but I try to avoid subspace. That sounds really odd. I've been there. I know what subspace is like. But for a sadist top, my partner is very heavily sadist. Once you enter subspace, you don't respond anymore. Mm-hmm. Your responses to pain are gone. Mm-hmm. And that essentially ends the scene for a sadist and a masochist, because once you stop responding, the sadist isn't getting anything from you. And so then that's the end.
As a sadist, when I have taken somebody to subspace, I feel that I've done a job well done.
And that's totally something that, you know, the masochists have those goals. And if one of those goals is subspace, it's perfectly okay to get there. And yay, you made it there. Because some people can't.
Now, as my sadist, I am with you totally. I want the suffering. I want the squirming. My girls often accuse me of being evil because I won't let them get to subspace. I break the rhythm
mm-hmm.
or something just mm-hmm. just to deny them that moment.
That tends to be when you hear terms of endearment, isn't it?
Well, those in terms of endearment are bastard. And, well, anyway.
And some of us play more sensually than others.
True. Luna, you were saying yes. Subspace.
Well, what I was saying was that subspace may be a goal for a lot of submissives. I mean, that is something that is talked about anywhere you go. Mm-hmm. But if your goal is pain processing and you're working on techniques for positive pain processing, you want to try to avoid subspace because you stop processing. As you explained, there are ways to avoid subspace. There are ways for the sadist to make you avoid subspace. So as long as in negotiations you say, I want to work on this pain processing technique, so we want to try and avoid subspace, here's mm-hmm. how you can avoid it with me. Mm-hmm. And so if you want to work towards that, but so subspace isn't the end-all be-all of play, like so many people believe. And sometimes it is just a mutually fulfilling sadomasochistic experience. So hopefully people can see why some masochists say, I'm not going for subspace, and why it might not be a good idea to go every single time.
Well, I can definitely understand, because for a pure masochist, especially, you go into subspace and you're not enjoying what you enjoy anymore. You're not getting that pain anymore. You lose it.
Mm-hmm.
For I consider myself a masochist, but not in a pure form. I do enjoy some of the pain, but it is still painful. It's not, it doesn't cause me to get an energy rush. When I came into the lifestyle, I was reading all these articles on FetLife and all this stuff that goes kinky and popular and all this, and it's subspace this and subspace that, and I never experienced subspace. So I started trying to get there and just had a horrible time trying to reach it. And I think for myself, I've only probably teetered on it a few times. I think I've gone into it once or twice.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely would like to try your methods, all the things that you've discussed, and hopefully get to the point where I don't feel like I need to go there. So, and I hope that our listeners can see it the same way and feel the same way. Luna, it has been such a pleasure talking to you. I think we have learned a tremendous amount, all of us, as well as our listeners. And I want to thank you so much for joining us tonight and explaining this and helping us understand this better.
If anyone needs to know more, there are a lot of interesting information on my website. Like you said, I did have a series on YouTube. And if anyone wants to go get that ebook, it's 50% off.
But you also assist with a website, dominantguide.com?
Yes, I founded Dominant Guide. I obviously don't write for it, but I do manage it behind the scenes and make sure that it has quality content just like Submissive Guide. So it's relatively new. It's about a year old still. And it's always looking for authors. But I hope it eventually has the same reach that Submissive Guide does.
Well, we will definitely be putting Submissive Guide, Dominant Guide, and I believe Iron Gate
mm-hmm.
on our Hot Links page, because they're, as a matter of fact, I do believe the Iron Gate is already on there. But we'll make sure the other two are as well. And also the link to your ebook, since you were so kind and generous to get us a promo code for that. Thank you very much. We really appreciate speaking with you tonight. And I think you have offered a treasure trove of information for our listeners. So we really do appreciate it.
I had a great time.
This is Bitsy Blue. Join me and 9 of my friends next week on KinkyCast.
Welcome back on the Kinky Cast. We have a special guest, Sinclair Sexsmith, with us today. How are you today?
I'm doing great. How are you?
Fantastic. So you have something coming up called Submissive Playground. Tell me about that.
Well, it is a completely online e-course that's about 2 months long. It's going to run through July and August, and it's for a place for submissives to come and explore submission. It's not a teaching course. So I'm not teaching you how to be submissive. It's more for people who already know that they're submissive, who want to play with tasks and homework and watching erotic videos and reading kinky stories and thinking deeper about their own submission.
So this is the second time the course has been run. What's new and different about it this time?
That's right. We did it in January. My boy is a pretty amazing teacher and web designer, and so he put the whole thing together online, and we collaborated on curriculum. And it was really successful in January. We did it really compressed, so we did it in 4 weeks, and this time it's almost 8 weeks. We're taking 2 weeks between each of the units, and so that people have more time to work through the materials, to do their experiments, to think about what the homeworks are. So that's really new in the summer school version. So we have some excellent guest videos, including Lee Harrington is going to speak on bondage and what it's like as a bondage bottom. And then we have some guests about masochism and about service and about discipline. We have a couple of new people, and then we have the folks who also contributed to the January course, which were Tina Horn and Katie Diamond and Raven Caldera, who's been on the Kinky Cast, I think.
Absolutely. And we're looking to get Lee Harrington on here pretty soon, too.
Oh, that's great.
What was the response like the first time?
Oh, it was excellent. We had a full course, and there are three different levels of enrollment. So you can do it at just the level where you get all access to all the materials, and you do the social calls where we're all on a call together and you access the message board. And then there are other levels that have one-on-one sessions with me if you want a little extra guidance or support or dominance, because I offer my services as a dominant if people want to play with someone else that way. It was very well received. People have given it high praise since then. It kind of makes me blush. It's hard for me to sing my own praises that way, but people really liked it, and I've got a lot of great quotes up on the website from people who were in the first course.
What was it like to run something about a topic so personal as DS online, which can be very impersonal?
Oh, that's a good question. You know, I've been writing confessional journals online since about 1996. So I am very familiar with the intimacy of the online world and how sometimes it's actually easier for me to be personal and intimate with strangers than it is to do that with my community and my loved ones. And so I've been honing that voice and that teaching style for a long time, I think. And as I've been doing more and more teaching and more interactions with people on Skype and coaching sessions online, I think that's something that I've had a lot of practice with. I think it's hard. I think it's a challenge, but it didn't feel challenging for me so much as I felt challenged. It might be a challenge for participants. And I did my best to make them really comfortable and to let them kind of feel into what their comfort level was and what they wanted to do with me.
In your mind, what is the highlight of the course going to be?
Oh my gosh. I really love the live calls. And this time we're going to do it in a video format. So we're going to be on Spreecast, where there's going to be me on video talking them through the live call, and then they can be in a chat box and talking to each other and talking to me, so that they don't have to unmute themselves and talk on a conference call. I think that can be kind of scary, but I really love it when people spoke up, and I really loved hearing everybody's stories about what they were doing and what it was like, and that they hated this homework or they loved this homework, or they, you know, hated it, but then it gave them a revelation about what they love. I love that stuff. So hearing the feedback and hearing the people go through the process of kind of examining and reflecting on their own submissive path, that's my favorite part of all of this.
So you're a dominant yourself?
Yes.
So what's your favorite part of dominating a few dozen folks?
I don't quite see it as dominating the players, although we can play with that. That's one of the kind of options on the table. It's more like I'm facilitating an experience for them. And it's hard to answer, though, because it kind of does seem like that on the outside, that I'm the one dominating all of the little players who are all submissives and coming to me. But that's not quite how it feels. I really trust in each of their agencies to come to me and to co-create the experience that we want to have. So that's not answering your question. My favorite part of dominating two dozen players is giving them assignments and then seeing that they do it. Telling them what to do and then they do it, and then I feel very powerful. And they say that they like that, the people who do it, and then, you know, then they're like, I love this homework. I loved reading this thing. I love doing this essay for you. I loved writing this dirty story. I love that part. That's my favorite.
And you're growing as a community doing it. So that's the really good part.
Yeah, I really like that. I think there's not enough people talking about what it's like to be submissive and what it, how they're learning from each other. And, you know, as a dominant, and that's one of my secret kind of agendas for this course, is to have more information available out there and have stronger submissives available, because sometimes I don't know what to turn, where to turn to when I have difficulties in my own DS dynamic. And I want people to have more theory on submission so I can know about it and then my own DS can be better.
Let's talk about the mechanics for a second. What is the registration time period?
It's open in June. So it opened on the 1st, and then it'll close on the 30th, which is Monday, and the course will start on July 1.
And everybody needs to be in and set up by the 30th.
Yep, exactly. They can register until the 30th. And there's only the star players and the fancy players. Those are the ones that have the interactions with me, the sessions, the one-on-one time, and the replies to their homeworks. There are limited spots for that because there's only one of me. So if you want one of those spots to have some one-on-one time with me, then I suggest signing up sooner because they'll fill.
How many spots are there all told?
There's 10 star player and they have one session with me, and there's 2 in the fancy player and they have 4 sessions with me. So 1 for each unit of the course. And then there can be a lot of broke ass players. I think I'd probably have to cap it at 100 because of my software, but, I don't expect that to be full.
And how much does this cost?
It's $150 for the broke ass, for 8 weeks. And then the star is $250. The fancy package is $600. So it's a lot of one-on-one time with me.
And so that starts in July. During July and August, how often are people involved in participating?
There's going to be 4 units and a pre-course and a post-course. So we're going to have 5 calls altogether. Basically, every other week we'll have a live call from July 1st to August. I think the last day is the 20th. I don't remember. It's a Thursday.
And what time of the day or night does this take place?
The live calls are just one of the pieces of the course, and they're on Thursdays and Saturdays. So there's a Thursday night and a Saturday morning, my time, which is I'm in San Francisco, so Pacific time. But I tried to make a variable of a night and a morning so that people who are on the East Coast and people overseas could have an easier time calling in and contributing to those calls. It was tricky in January. I only had Thursday nights, and some of the folks in Europe were like trying so hard to stay up and stay awake until 2 a.m. to be on the call, but then they kept falling asleep. And they would email me like, I'm so sorry, sir. I really wanted to be on the call, but
are you there? Hello.
Too bad. So I hope that the Saturday call will mean that more people can come. There's just no good time when everybody around the world is available. So I was trying to make it outside of work hours. And but, you know, people have classes, people have time zones. It's a challenge. But they'll be recorded and people can have access to after the call. So,
well, this sounds like a real exciting time for submissives and to join you in the submissive playground starting in July. And let's get everybody registered in the month of June. So this could be a great opportunity for a lot of people.
Thank you so much. I hope so. I think it's going to be really fun.
We want to hear back from you to see how it went.
Oh, yeah. Let's come on in September and talk about it.
Sounds
do
great.
Some submissive meditations or some homeworks or something.
Jason here for the National Coalition for Sexual Freedom on KinkyCast.com. The National Coalition for Sexual Freedom is fighting for your rights. See how they're doing it at ncsfreedom.org.
You have been listening to episode 19 of the Kinky Cast. Today we heard Luna on positive pain processing. See our hot links page for the referenced sites and book promotional offer. We want to hear from you with your comments or questions. So email us, questions@kinkycast.com, or call and leave a voicemail at 916-KINKY69. If you leave a contact number, we will try to reach you to join us on the show. Some listeners want to remain completely anonymous, so we have the Bashful tab on our webpage. Just type your message and hit send. The Kinky Cast is a production of Rooster in the Round. On behalf of Woody, the Beast, and Cassie, I'm Max. See you next week when we host a panel discussion.